This is the LarryInFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lannon. It's an honor and a pleasure to have John Melling with me. John is the soon-to-be-retired public information officer for the Fishers Fire and Emergency Services. And with me is the director of public relations for the city of Fishers, Ashley Elrod. And it's interesting. I've never had two PR people on the podcast at one time. But this is quite an honor because the two of you do work together quite often and are in the same business. So I'm going to start with John because, John, the Facebook post I read announcing your retirement was definitely a John Melling quote. You know, we were taught in journalism. We were taught in journalism school that the most important thing to write in any story is the lead, the first couple of sentence or two. And your first sentence was, "I did a thing." I think we'll put that as your quote of the century there.
That could be my new hashtag.
Hashtag is another thing.
I feel like I've heard that multiple times in our time together.
That's true, too. Yeah.
So this is not a new quote.
Yeah, it's usually it's a bad thing. Hey, Ashley, I did a thing.
And that's where you, I did a thing, and then Ashley, okay, tell me what it was.
Yeah. And it's usually fine. Oh, okay. Usually.
But you don't know until you get the next sentence, right? Just so people know, John has had 36 years of experience working in fire departments, 31 of those 36 years in Fishers, and you have made the decision to retire. Explain how you came about that decision.
Well, like many things I do in my life, I just kind of go, huh, what can I do today? So, you know, The tough thing about leaving a job that you love is that you don't always leave when you should. And I never wanted to be that individual that was hanging on to the door frames as they were dragging me out of the firehouse telling me I had to leave. So circumstances were just right that it was time to move on and pass the nozzle on to someone else. And or in this case, the microphone, and see what happens.
Nozzles and microphones look a lot alike, you know.
very different effects. One usually puts out a fire, the other usually starts one. So,
but see, you had the uniform, you actually did the job, and then go into public information. And I've always found it interesting. Sometimes agencies, and I'll ask Ashley about this, they will hire people who worked within the organization and train them to deal with the media. Other people hire media people and then try to train them about what it's like to be in that area. And I found it, and I worked for a federal agency and knew a lot of our media relations people, and that agency found that it was much easier to get an internal candidate, know the agency, and then train them how to deal with the media. You kind of came out of that role, did you not?
Yeah, really. I was working in policy and economic development and in on the communication side, but then came over here to Fishers. So that's exactly my path.
I got to tell you something, John. I worked years ago for Network Indiana Radio, and I was awakened in the middle of the night and ended up going out to a fire. And it was early in the morning, on a Sunday morning. It was very, very hot. It was a July day. Even early in the morning, it was extremely hot and humid. Huge fire in downtown Broad Ripple. So, okay. I mean, it was a big fire, and people were worried about how it was going to spread, and there were fire. And the firefighters, because of the heat, were dropping like flies. But think about the FPD, you know, fire department there. Once somebody drops, they've got somebody to replace him. You know, there's somebody to come in, they just take him away, get him treated, and some of them came right back into it. Mm-hmm. But what I found interesting, when I showed up at the scene, it was a little bit later than some of the other media people, and this fellow, I can't even remember his name, who was the public information officer for the Indianapolis Fire Department, he just started telling jokes. Did you hear the one about this? Did you hear the one about that? I have always found that what separates the really good public information officers from the really great ones is a sense of humor. You certainly have that.
No, I appreciate that. I'm not sure everybody agrees with you, but
you're being very
thanks for
humble.
Being my fan. Now I know who the other one was besides my mom that kept liking everything. So thank you.
No, I think it's really, you know, John's experience both in the field and, you know, in the firehouses and really as part of Fisher's Fire, when you were growing so rapidly, the city was growing so rapidly, you know, that kind of experience you truly can't replicate anymore in Fisher's. And I think that that is what led to his successes as the PIO for Fisher's Fire and Emergency Services. I think it's and absolutely his humor is, I think, world renowned at this point. You know, he's had his fair share of viral posts, and it certainly did put Fisher's on the map for communications and bringing a sense of humor to serious situations.
Well, I've got a question. I can ask both of you this question. I'll start with John. In all the years you've been dealing with the media, I would have to think that the biggest change really hasn't been on your side. It's been on the side of the media, because the media has changed so much. There was a newspaper in town, maybe. There were TV stations. That was about it. Now you've got people like me who write a blog. You've got other kinds of publications out there. And quite frankly, the newspapers and TV stations don't have the staff they used to have. Tell me how that has changed the way you do your job.
Yeah, that's been a huge change. You know, you used to be able to see the media coming. You know, it was two vans and four or five people climbing out and, 15, 20 minutes of setup before, you know, you're worried about that mic turning on. And in today's world, the mic is always on because you don't know who the reporter is per se, because the term reporter's a little loose now because everyone with a phone in theory can be a reporter. There's a lot of debates on that I'm sure we could have. But as far as in my approach to sharing our messaging and talking about our people and encouraging the public to make behavioral changes, the essence of it hasn't changed. The point of why my position exists is still the same. The audience has evolved over time, but the messaging in large part is still valid for 30 years ago and today. Maybe the specifics of it, you know, we talk about electric cars now. We didn't talk about electric cars 30 years ago unless we were just seeing an episode of Star Trek. But the essence of the approach is really the same. It's giving good information in a timely fashion in the most honest, transparent way you can.
Yeah, it's just Star Trek. I was just thinking about that. You know what? The idea of having doors that open on their own was something that was not heard of. Well, now right. We walk in the door of the library where we're recording this, and the doors open automatically mm-hmm. for us. We don't think anything about it now. I don't know, Ashley. I sometimes would hear this from the PIOs I would get to know, that there would be some big incident and several agencies are there. And so everybody was, okay, who's going to handle the newsies? The newsies are the news reporters. That's what you call them internally. So sometimes it's, okay, who's going to handle the media on this? Will it be Ashley for the city, John for the fire department, the now retired Tom Wegger for the police department? Then I have some new people working there who are great. But sometimes you just have to figure out who's going to handle the media.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, while the fire communications is so different from my day-to-day job of just, you know, making people aware of what's happening in their city, John and I have enjoyed a really close relationship as colleagues. And most of that is just from mutual understanding. So we always know we have each other's back. And so I'll definitely miss that. But, you know, John and I really over the last several years have, you know, just created a good cadence. So we understand each other's skill sets. I never want to be in charge of emergency communications on scene. That is not my wheelhouse. That is absolutely where John shines. And I think that, you know, the other thing that I really appreciate with John and have leaned on in the past is his ability to just develop the relationships with all of the reporters in our area. That not only just helps it us to have a better relationship, have, you know, off the record conversations so that there's just a better understanding, but also, you know, it makes the job a little bit more fun. And he's able to, you know, call up reporters when we want coverage, or, you know, when they have a need, we can bounce ideas off of them. And I just think that that's unique to, you know, really invest that much time into the reporters that, that cover Fishers. And that's certainly changed even just in the last 5 years. We see a lot of changes at the stations. But
and I think that's your point, John, about not sure what kind of reporter is coming at you. There were always a set of rules. Reporters understand, the professional ones. Okay, this is on the record. This is off the record. This is on background. Background means you could use it, just don't use my name mm-hmm. or who I'm with. But you can report that and say right. It's a source that knows what they're talking about. So they're not everybody who's a new or amateur journalist understand. I may be a volunteer journalist, but I made a living at it before, so I sort of understand these rules. So I think that has something to do with how you handle. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something else, because you actually, in your post on Facebook announcing your retirement, told us all you came to Fishers in 1990. I came to Fishers in 1991 to live. I wasn't, you know, doing news blog, but I was married then and ended up moving to Fishers then. The 1990 census had Fishers at a population of just over 7,500. Mm-hmm. And today, we think we're somewhere between 102,000 and 105,000. Nobody's sure, but we just estimate at this point.
Everybody keeps moving. You can't count them. Yeah.
They move in and out all the time, and so you can't keep a, you know, can't keep a scorecard on this. Just talk about the Fishers that you saw in 1990 and where Fishers is now and how we got to be the way we are.
Well, I'd tell you a couple of quick stories for you. The day I moved into Fishers, I wanted to get to know the area a little bit. So I went down 116th Street heading east, had just crossed over the interstate, and I got as far as Cumberland Road, and I turned around because I was afraid I was going to get lost out in the country. There was nothing. It was a two-lane road, and I saw a couple of cows ahead, and that was about it. Fast forward a couple of years to my first day as a full-time firefighter with Fishers. I opened Station 92 at Brook School on 116th Street on New Year's Eve. So that station's always been my home. The weird thing about being out there is you saw kids drive to school in the morning. Mm-hmm. You saw kids drive home from school in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And at the time when Deer Creek got built, you saw people on the weekends lost trying to find Deer Creek. If you ever saw a car during the day, other than those time frames, mm-hmm. those people were lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we would go running out on the apron to wave because you didn't know if you were going to see another person that day. So it was great.
We all knew the Fishers of those of us have been around a long time. It was, you know, basically a farm town that was mm-hmm. sort of becoming a bedroom community. And it took a long time for Fishers to get its own identity. And now
right.
we obviously are a much different place.
Mm-hmm.
John, tell me how firefighting strategies have changed with, you know, different home and commercial building materials. I remember talking to Chief Arusa a few years ago, and he said, we have fewer fires, but the fires we have are sometimes more difficult to fight. Talk about that.
Right. Well, a lot of it is the building construction, the type of materials that we use, the materials that are used for all of our stuff. So I grew up in a house that was built in the 50s. If you had a fire in that house, I like to tell people you could finish your dinner, put on another load of laundry, and then get out of the house, and you were fine. In today's construction, a room can be completely involved in fire in 3 minutes. Everything we have is built with glues. Essentially, it's petroleum-based, so we live in gas, essentially. And you throw a match into that. It goes really fast. So the other part of what I do is community risk reduction and that public education side of it. And I can't profess that enough of how important it is for people to have working smoke alarms in their home, because you've got 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping with your doors closed to keep that smoke and fire out. It's not like you see on television. It's not at all. You can't see through the smoke. you don't have to worry about the fire getting you because the smoke will kill you long before the fire gets to you. It sounds dramatic. I understand that. It probably won't happen to you, but it happens to someone. Mm-hmm. And we don't get to know in advance who that is. So I can't urge the community enough to be prepared, listen to our messaging, and take those behavioral changes because we want you to be safe.
You know, Ashley, I think there's one aspect of this a lot of us don't think about that, you know, when we buy our homeowners insurance, we're paying for fire coverage. Mm-hmm. And what I knew, a friend of mine was an insurance agent. He said, you wouldn't believe it. If you live in a place, let's say, with a volunteer fire department who do the best they can, but they're not professional necessarily. But the reputation of your fire department has a very big impact on the rate you pay for homeowners insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's all part of, you know, Mayor Fadness's vision for Fishers is that, yes, we want to be the best when it comes to infrastructure and quality of life, but, you know, it's very important as well that we have the best of the best when it comes to public safety. Because the same is true for the police department. You know, if they're proactive on public safety, that lowers their cost too. But when it comes to the fire department and their ability to, you know, your proximity to the local firehouse is important to that. And even just from the medical care standpoint, I personally, I may be biased, but I believe the Fishers Fire Department, from a medical services standpoint, is one of the best in the country when it comes to that.
You know, I saw Chief Arusa at a meeting, and I remember talking to him about my mother-in-law, who was passed away about a little over a year ago at age 92. And I'm glad to see you're doing some proactive things in terms of giving people classes on how to avoid it. We did everything we could to avoid any falls, but she did fall occasionally. And any time that happened, your department was on the scene. They were terrific. Always ask the right questions at the end. You know, we explain to what we're doing. They say, well, you do the best you can to prevent it, but sometimes you will have to call us. And you were out there immediately, and I just loved the professionalism of the emergency services people.
And our approach to that has always been, how would you want your own family to be treated? It's, you know, because we do have families in other places, and they go through the same things that people experience here. And we want wherever those our family members are to be getting that same kind of care. It's just being a human being, in my opinion.
Well, and sorry to interrupt, but I'm interrupting because John's being very humble. His work on community risk and reduction is incredible. And just in the last 2 to 3 years, even, he has quadrupled his impact on the community. And so much of it is, these programs around fall and risk reduction. Earlier this year, he, you know, created a program for fire detector replacements out at Britton Falls, one of our 55 and older communities here in Fishers, where he literally was on ladders in several homes, near
125 mm-hmm. homes, I think.
My goodness.
Changing out, you know, smoke detectors and changing batteries. And so, you know, he's being very humble, but it does mean a lot to him, I know.
How much is this costing me for you to say all these? I'm on a fixed income now. I can't afford.
We've got plenty of time for you to pay me back.
As long as we don't have any tears shed, we're okay.
That's right.
I want to talk about COVID because it's fire and emergency services. Fire is one big aspect of the job, but also you call for an ambulance. That's your department as well.
That's correct.
I always thought about the first responders during COVID because when COVID was rampant in the year 2020 and on, or in the early years particularly, these emergency service people would respond to whatever, you know, they were dispatched to go to and had no idea what COVID may or may not be. That you wear the mask, it gives you some level of protection, but it doesn't protect you from everything. That was certainly a challenge for all of us, but I would have to think of it as a special one for your emergency services people. So just kind of talk about how COVID had an impact. I mean, I still wonder if we are still completely over the trauma of that, all of us, that happened with COVID. But explain how that impacted fire and emergency services.
Well, I think you're right. It is still something we deal with today. Maybe not so much as from an emotional standpoint, as much as the lessons that we learned through that process. The country, the world really went through something we haven't been through in decades, and particularly in having the ability to react better than obviously from the last big event. But we did the best that we could. We were very intentional on what we did. We took as many precautions, not only for the community, but for our firefighters as well, which is really tough to do when you're learning it on the fly. You know, there was no manual to pull out and know what to do. So we were relying on a lot of experts who didn't always agree. And so we took a lot of our own professional experience and imported that into our policies and procedures on how to address the needs of the community.
You know, Ashley, I will give you a chance to talk about this, because when the mayor rolled out his testing program, the health department was created, later the providing the inoculations for the shots that were given later on. Fire department and other departments all came together for people to have a drive-through window to get their testing, to get their inoculations. So without the help of people, other departments like fire and emergency services, I don't think the city could have provided that.
Never, never. From the moment that we realized that vaccination, well, really, when testing was going to be one of the things that would help us manage COVID in our community, fire and emergency services stepped right up. And that was still a very scary time. I mean, I'm getting like goosebumps thinking about this, because we didn't know what COVID even was. And these men and women at Fisher's Fire and police and early days of the health department, they were putting themselves at risk, and then by extension, their firehouses and their families. And so, you know, they really stepped up for the community. And it's one of the reasons why our community had the lowest death rate in the state of Indiana as a result of these actions. And so, you know, it's one of my I wasn't even involved in it, but it was one of my, you know, proud moments of the city is just. It's exactly what John shared earlier. It's what would you do if this was your own family? And it's still definitely the small town mentality that I think we all kind of go to work with every day. But now it's just on a much larger scale.
Can I make a quick point on that? Because I got to pay Ashley back on this. Is I feel like Fisher's, as well as many other communities, but Fisher's that I know of, was kind of like that duck, you know, just kind of floating on top of the water, and the feet, the communications department that was paddling like crazy underneath all of the COVID activity. It was a citywide participation in making the successes that we had. Police and fire, I think did amazing work, but it really was an entire city effect. The meetings that were going on, trying to figure out the messaging, the accurate messaging.
Right.
I mean, absolute chaos, a little insanity.
Yes.
But everybody was working furiously to come up with those answers.
And so, we all wanted to do our best for our residents.
Right.
You know, that's just the common thread. We just
wanted to do it right.
Yeah, exactly.
We had to be right.
Yep.
And I will always say this. I try to bring this up anytime this issue comes up, is that Scott Vadnais, as the mayor of Fisher's, took tremendous political heat over creating the health department. The state's even passed a law where no mayor could do that again. But I think if you look back on it, Fisher's reacted quickly and in the interest of its residents, And I think if you measured against any other community in Indiana, I can't find anybody who did a better job. So I'm impartial observer, that has always been my thought with all the political attacks that came with that. Mm-hmm. He took that heat and said, hey, no big problem. I did what I thought was right.
Yeah.
And we still have that health department today. John, in your Facebook post I referenced earlier, you write about the music and lyrics of Sparky and MC Axe. Now, my twin daughters are 30. They still remember those songs from their elementary school days, and you had a lot to do with that. And I've always felt that music is a great way to get a communication across to anybody, whether it's adults or kids, but the youngsters particularly. So talk about how you effectively were able to communicate fire safety to these youngsters using that.
Well, and I'd love to take all the credit for this, but I was but a pawn in it. Phil Cowley was our fire chief at the time, and he had a bit of a musical and theatrical background. And one of the discussions that we continually had is, are we effective with our messaging? We would go into the schools, we put our white shirts on and look very professional, and you know, we would have all the kids come out and we would tell them, stop, drop, and roll, kids. And would walk away, and generally what we were doing was just getting them all amped up. And then we would walk out, and the teachers were left with, oh, my God, what have you done? They'll spend the rest of the day getting the kids calmed back down. So outside of giving them a little amped up sugar feel, we weren't effective in our messaging. And Chief Cowley wanted us to be effective. And so he had this idea, which was insane, and it'll never work, to create a group of singing firefighters that rap. And if you look at the early pictures of this group, rapping firefighters is not the first image that comes to your mind.
No.
So the good news is we fairly quickly figured out that was not going to be our genre. And we started allocating some older songs, a lot of 50s and 60s type songs that we were able to rewrite the words to. We actually did a couple of original music songs as well. But we started taking that into our schools. And it was such an unheard of approach that we started doing interviews across the country about what we were doing, and it kind of took off slowly. It kept developing, and other people wanted to see it. And so on our off days, we would do all the parks throughout Indiana. We had a great connection with DNR, and we would go for a weekend and do a performance on a Saturday night and camp, you know, till the next day. We went up to Michigan. We were up at Kellogg's, invited us up. I never got a cereal box with my picture on it. It was always my one regret. But we would go up there for some of their events. We were in Orlando, Florida. The group still continues today. It's 30 years later. Different performers who are doing an amazing job, ironically still using the same slapstick jokes and the songs. But they've partnered up with the Casey program as well, and they're literally traveling all over the country doing this work.
You know, Ashley, the thing about this that I find fascinating, and as for you as somebody who knows public relations, this was a huge risk to do something like this. And as John said, at first it didn't work out, so you just kind of changed it around a little bit, and it did. So they took a lot of risks doing this and had no idea whether this was going to work or not. And the fact that it did is wonderful, but you didn't know that going into it.
No, and this was this was all before social media and everything. And to also have just that level of success and something that was so unusual at that time just shows you how special it was. But I also think, and this is what John does so well, is that you can take serious topics that you really need to know, you know, very specific steps or information about, and you can still make it fun, because that actually does make it memorable. That makes people want to engage in it and learn about it. And that's, you know, John has carried that through, you know, on his infamous social media posts on the fire department's pages. But, you know, this is one of my favorite things. I only discovered this group a couple of years ago when John just mentioned it in passing. And he shared a VHS tape of their performances that I
did. You may have to explain what that is to your listeners.
I did, but
yeah. Do you still have players that you can play it on?
Okay. Yeah, I did. I did hold on to it because I knew it would come back around someday where I could use it for something. And I think now is that time. So we'll have to get that into digital format.
With additional questions. I don't like where this is turning.
I do want to ask you this, because I remember talking to Tom Weger when he retired. He mm-hmm. was a PIO for the police department mm-hmm. for years. I asked him what's next for him. He said, I'm going fishing. And he may still be fishing today. I don't know.
Hopefully.
But one piece of advice people always give anybody who retires around here is that however you retire, do not retire the way Larry Lannan did, because I just can't seem to ever – I've tried to quit this job twice and nobody will let me.
Nope.
But seriously, have you thought about what's next for you?
We were just as we walked in, Ashley was asking me, and I haven't even got Friday night figured out yet. So I don't know what Plan B is, but it's I feel kind of like I'm getting out of high school, but much smarter than I was when I actually got out of high school, and I realize that literally the world is mine. I can go anywhere. I can do anything. I'm kind of tossing around a presidential election. It feels like we're looking for some options there.
Is this the announcement?
Yes, I'm announcing.
You're the chairman of some committee somewhere. I don't know which one. So
if anyone has a lot of money, they would like to support my campaign, please call 1-800-JOHN-NEEDS-MONEY. And I don't know. I may retire. I've got a lot of things that I like to do. I just don't know what I want to be when I grow up yet. So
first thing I did was ditch my alarm clock. That was that's the one thing about retirement that I think the most. We're going to wrap this up. Ashley, anything you want to say about John as he retires?
Oh.
Ooh.
You know,
I asked that question in the nicest possible way.
Absolutely. I will say, and I shared this with John, but, you know, walking into this position almost 8 years ago, I didn't know anything about emergency communications. And, you know, there's often a friction between what my role is and public safety, because they're really completely different. But John was one of the first people to really welcome me into the Fishers family, show me the ropes. And the times that I've leaned on John for his expertise, you know, never did he ever make me feel like I shouldn't be doing that. And so, you know, he has been a really wonderful colleague. Always somebody you can call up for some levity in a situation. and I, you know, I will miss knowing that he's always on duty. You know, John is dedicated to his job and is very passionate about it, and is literally on call 24/7, even when he is on vacation. And so I'm most excited about him to be able to turn in that phone, that city phone, and, mm-hmm. you know, turn off those social media notifications and, you know, just have some peace for a little bit.
Yes, when I was a government manager, when I turned in my government phone, that was one of the nicest things I ever did.
It's going to be so quiet.
So, John, this is your last opportunity. We're recording this on March 7th. You're, I think, officially retired tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So we're the day before the official retirement. Any message you want to give to the community before we wrap mm-hmm. this up?
Oh, this is your Oprah moment, isn't mm-hmm. it? This is where you're wanting me to cry.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying.
I'm not falling for it, Larry.
Just,
I'm not going to do it.
You can tell the joke. I don't care what you say.
No, I just want to thank everybody in the community, my firefighters. What a ride. Mm-hmm. What a ride it's been. I was at St. Louis de Montfort last week or earlier this week talking to sixth graders about careers. And I had an opportunity to express to them it's really about passion. Money's great. It gets a lot of things. But if you don't have the passion to follow with it, it's not worth it. And I came a little late into the game because I was chasing that $1 million. But every day, I can't wait to come into work. So thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was a journalist. I went to public service. I never made my million.
Right.
But, you know, I think if you get up and you go to a job you love, that is more payment than anything else that you could have. And I see that that's the way you feel about your job. Well, thank you, John, for your service to the community. Enjoy your retirement. I hope to see you around town even during your retirement years. John Melling, as I mentioned before, retiring public information officer for Fisher's Fire and Emergency Services. And I want to thank Ashley Elrond, the public relations director for the City of Fishers, for joining the discussion. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.